Right, well, Mitten Darsors V. Mia Raro Mors Lavelle V Heavu Adro As Cornuic Hagonis Orgethic Curno, you represent us in our media. So, good morning, friends. I'm going to talk to you today about how Cornish language and Cornish culture are represented in the media. Every culture should have their own voice represented in the world's media, particularly in public service broadcasting. Right now, the situation is that we don't, and it's time for that to change. I'm sure I'm telling you things you know already, people in the room, but in 2003, 15 years ago, the Cornish language was recognised under the European Charter for the Protection of Regional and Minority Languages. A decade later, 4 years ago, in 2014, our Cornish national minority status was recognised under the Framework Convention for the Protection of National Minorities, meaning that the Cornish have the same legal recognition as the Welsh, Scots and Northern Irish. In this context, I'm calling for the establishment of a BBC Curno / Cornwall to sit in its rightful place alongside BBC Alba, S4C, BBC Cymru. To this end, in 2016, I started a campaign on the campaign platform 38 Degrees for BBC Curno, looking to the BBC Royal Charter review in 2017 as an opportunity for change. The premise of the campaign is very straightforward and simple. Give Cornish language and culture the equal status, recognition, respect and prominence in public service broadcasting that it deserves. So the campaign is sitting there, there's nearly 1,000 signatures on it, which is great, but it's not good enough. I don't think that's enough yet to do something with the petition. So this is really about kind of what else, talking about what else we can do for the campaign. What's been really encouraging is there are many, many positive comments. When people have signed the campaign, they've left comments. So I'm going to read a few over the course of the next sort of 10 minutes or so. Here's one. Cornish Cornuic is the richest aspect of Cornwall's heritage. It is alive and kicking as a legitimate and recognised language of the UK, and allotted television time is the obvious route to take in encouraging its continued development and increased use. It's a comment somebody left. So, here we are in 2018. The BBC Royal Charter review has happened last year. The Scottish Gaelic broadcaster, MG Alba, their response to the Royal Charter review was synchronous with our needs. They said, the BBC must articulate a consistent philosophy on supporting its autochthonous language services across the UK as a whole. A sentiment which I agree with. The UK government ignored the Cornish in their response to the Royal Charter review. I want to see and hear a plurality of Cornish voices across a range of media, supported in a commissioning framework underpinned by legislation. Our ancient tongue, our culture, has grown and been formed by and has in turn formed this land and its people. Our autochthonous language holds a unique framing of the world. Like every language and culture, it is precious and should be nurtured. A couple more comments people left on the campaign. Language is fundamental to identity. See it in a nutshell. Another one. Language death is as bad a tragedy as the death of a species. Something which it's hard to realise if you don't think about it, if you just sort of look at the way that the media presents languages, tongues, is that there are 300 languages spoken in the UK today, regularly. We live in multicultural communities that between us generate a diversity of expression that feeds the biodiversity of human consciousness, a rich ecology of views, viewpoints, perspectives. Another comment from the campaign. Cornish culture and language is just as important as any other British culture, yet we see very little to represent us that respects the real Cornwall, past and present. I'd add and future to that. The BBC needs to change this, as all cultures need an inclusive approach when broadcasting. Here's an example from the other side of the world. Māori TV. Māori TV is a state-owned public service broadcaster that was set up in 2004 with a remit enshrined in legislation in New Zealand. The principal function of the service is to promote Te Reo Māori Minga Tikanga Māori, Māori language and culture, through the provision of a high-quality, cost-effective Māori television service in both Māori and English that informs, educates and entertains a broad viewing audience and in doing so enriches New Zealand's society, culture and heritage. Māori TV provides Te Reo, a 100% Māori language channel, and a dual language Māori television channel watched by 45% of all New Zealanders. It is a successful, respectful, embracing of both Indigenous and non-Indigenous cultures. It receives 1.8 million viewers per month, and the audience has been increasing at a rate of 14% every year since the station's launch in 2004. And I really like the tone of their stated aim. They say, through our range of programmes, Māori television endeavours to show our place in the world and our world in one place. It is inclusive, it's confident, it's progressive, and the sentiment that they express resonates with our own Onan Hagol. The case for a BBC iPlayer-based BBC Kurnow channel is not just about rights and equality, it's also about seizing an opportunity to invest in Cornwall's future. We pay our BBC licence fees. Personally, I don't feel I'm getting good value for my money. If only the BBC had, as MG Alba put it, a consistent philosophy. How much of the licence fee should be spent on Cornish TV? I'll leave that question hanging. That might be one we can discuss. And another question people ask is, what about our production capacity? You know, all very well if the money was there and the investment was there and the structure was there, who's going to make all these programmes to fill a network? Well, we live in an incredibly creative, productive community. We also have a university that is spitting out a stream of talent. There's approximately 200 graduates from film and television that are coming out of Falmouth University. Many of them go away to work elsewhere, but quite a few of whom stay, set up their own companies, work for other companies. At the moment, a lot of that is focused on corporate production because that's where the work is. But they need industry placements, they need experience, and importantly, they need jobs. So there is an opportunity to build a channel, not just a channel for programmes, but a channel for good, high-quality jobs and futures for our young people. There's a great pool of experience and talent and resources in Cornwall. And I think with an open-minded approach to creating cultural, creative partnerships, it's not inconceivable that we could turn this into a reality. There's information is needed to push this idea forwards. And a piece of research was commissioned last summer by Falmouth University with Cornwall Council and the LEP to develop a strategy for the screen-based sector. This piece of research has yet to be published. When it is, I hope it speaks to this opportunity. If money to set up and run BBC Kurnow or Cornish TV is difficult, there's always the option of shining a light on the £20 million a year private wealth the Duchy of Cornwall provides for a single entitled individual. But money isn't the issue. It never really is. And production capacity can easily be grown on the fertile ground we have here in Kurnow. The only real question is about our collective will to make this vision a reality. So last year, in February 2017, the Council of Europe recommended immediate action to the UK government to take resolute action to ensure that revision of the BBC Charter improves access to the media for persons belonging to national and ethnic minorities, increases funding, ensures a variety of programmes in minority language, in particular the Irish language, involves minorities in their production, and introduces BBC support for the Cornish language. That was February last year. The government chose to ignore Cornwall entirely from the Royal Charter Review, so the campaign continues. February this year, 7th of February 2018, the Council of Ministers at the Council of Europe resolved their recommendations, reiterating that the UK government take resolute action to improve access, increase funding for a variety of programmes for minority languages, and introduce support for the Cornish language. and lava cough, you lava gwir. Never dolls maz a davers re here, mays den heb tavers a golisy dear. The old saying is a true saying. Never did good come of a tongue too long, but a man without a tongue loses his land. A people without a tongue lose their identity. Whether or not you speak fluently, are learning, or simply appreciate the beauty and difference that Kinnuic presents, language matters. Miavin Gwelez, Hakluiz, Drawlis, do author Lears Echen Levo Kerno. In Kinnuic, Han Sosnek, Han Tavozo Aral. Mes in Pozuk, a Storns Kerno, War a Rethva Media Kerno, Del U Agan Un. I want to see and hear stories from diverse Cornish voices, in Cornish and in English and in other languages, but importantly, from a Cornish perspective, on a Cornish media platform, as is our right. So I urge you to get behind this campaign, encourage others to sign the petition on 38 degrees, and let's build the framework to bring the necessary and inevitable future into our present.
Good one.
Maras. Yeah.
Thank you, Denzel.
Alistair's first.
It's one of the problems, that was superb, but it's one of the problems that we have is that the Welsh, the Scots, and the Irish are recognised as racial groups, but under the Framework Convention, the Cornish are not recognised as a racial group.
I don't know.
No, but I think this is something which we've got. We need to use the influence of the Council of Europe very much more on the way in which we go forward, because there's too much fluidity carrying on at the moment. And as far as the census is concerned, these things, that was superb. But, as he said, the government are not supporting these things. OK, we have a census coming up, possibly. By that time, population movement's going to be such that the case that we have will weaken and weaken through population growth from elsewhere. Time's not on our side on many things. We've got a strength of argument. We need to carry it forward through the agencies who can press this forward. I think some of it, as I said, getting racial status is on a balance with the Welsh and the Irish is crucial, I think. We could well do well to get advice from the Council of Europe on these issues to take forward. They have the ability and the advice. They're deeply concerned. To go back here, Council of Europe condemns the government of for neglect of the duchy. That's going back to last year, and still it goes on, but nothing's taking place to counter it.
Okay. Anyone else?
There's just one little point there. I think the Framework Convention, the actual definition of who is Cornish is not actually defined, as far as I know. Are we the whole population of Cornwall gets protected, I think?
If you look at the stuff, they don't define Irish, Scottish, Welsh or English either.
No.
And my personal view is that one of the strengths of the Convention is they don't define means to be Cornish.
National identity is elective.
It's elective. Yes.
So even if some guy just moves down from Essex last week, he can be protected under the convention because he enjoys Cornish culture, as far as I understand. Is that?
Yeah.
If he wants. So there's no racial thing. I mean, what I was going to say, that it'd be really interesting to find out the growth in language before and after S4C and BBC Alba. Is there figures there to help us in that? I mean, as far as anecdotally, I know that the Welsh language boomed after the media was created.
Yeah, so I don't know what those figures are. I'm sure that research, as far as S4C is concerned, absolutely exists. And I think, you know, part of making the case is about information, it's about data, it's about looking at those examples, looking at S4C, looking at ALBA, looking at Māori television, looking at other places where, and it's interesting because they all started at different times and in slightly different frameworks and with different populations and with different populations of language speakers and different populations of learners within it. So, you know, it would be really fascinating to look at that. But there is a simple principle that every single minority language that has its own broadcaster has seen sustainability and growth in their language as a direct result of it, and they all state that as a key principle. Yeah. Key principle of why they set up in the first place, key principle of, you know, why they are deserving of public funding in all cases, and a key sort of outcome of the channels.
So have you worked out the setup costs for that? I mean, was it Have you got any sort of figures that can, we could...
Four or five years ago, I did some calculations based on the licence fee and looking at S4C and the population of Wales, the population of Cornwall, and the population of England. I can't remember what those figures are off the top of my head, and they're out of date.
But I would say that is
a piece of work that could be done.
From first-hand experience, you know, lately I would expect that actually production costs and putting out the actual content would be vastly reduced than even 5 years ago. You can produce video and put them on platform so easily.
I think yes, you can, and part of the reason for having a formal channel is about having good editorial practices and good quality control practices, because anyone can go out and make a video and stick it on YouTube and there's nothing wrong with that, and that's great, but there's a significant difference in terms of what that content can do, what the audience for it is, and how it grows strategically over time. And it being sustainable, because, you know, yes, you can do that, but if you're not getting paid a proper professional wage for doing proper professional work, then it's not an industry, it's a hobby. So, you know, we need to move beyond that and into a parity with our Celtic cousins and other people.
Just a couple of other, I've got, Julian will be delighted that I've got this to hand, and you know, you're talking to the LEP, and they've
produced. When you say this to hand, the radio, that is.
Oh, sorry. It's the Cornwall and Isles of City LEP for 10 opportunities that they've just identified, and number one on that list is creative industries. And they, you know, they're talking about creating a enterprise zone, which Julian will probably tell us more, you know, this creative enterprise zone where there's tax breaks and there's, you know, all sorts of incentives, where, and they want to make clusters of creative industries. You know, and I'm sure with our new capital investment fund or whatever, you know, to attract investment, it's a really good time for this. It's just this perfect time, actually, for the council to show support for your idea.
You say show support, you could even say take leadership. Or
take leadership. Well, there you go.
Okay. I got Bert, then I got Malcolm.
But firstly, I think what Milo's saying is absolutely right, and that is that the next thing, is the next technical thing along the way is to undertake some research and to do some basic number crunching, which is partly about people, partly about costs, partly about how you actually
spend money and invest,
how to make it viable, and part of that is to persuade the BBC that actually it needs to be, with our licence fee, an investor in this project. What do the BBC get out of it? Well, not only do they get the fact that they are then undertaking a consistent philosophy, which is quite right, but also because of the relationship between the Broadcasting School and the University of Falmouth, which is a creative university, they actually get the opportunity to develop a pool of people coming through who are feeding into the greater organisation, which is the BBC. And if the BBC is famous for anything, it is for developing talent. And actually what you've got is, I forget what you said, mate, spitting talent. You know, you've got a talent spitting machine which they could be involved in, which is a really good thing. I like talent spitting.
I prefer talent spitting to sausage factory.
Yeah, yeah, fair enough. Yes, yes. And I just wanted to say one other thing, and that is that at the same time as when we originally talked to the University of Falmouth, we also talked about the potential audience, and I think it's the audience which is really interesting. And in terms of promoting the petition, in terms of promoting the idea, it's important that we don't contain the idea simply within Cornwall and engage directly between ourselves, because what Denzel is talking about is doing this on a web-based platform. There is the potential for a worldwide audience. The trick is to try and understand how big that audience might be and how much it would need development. And for me, this is my question to Denzel, do you think that it is important that in the development of the idea that we actually set about trying to scope the potential audience figure, because that would be persuasive to the BBC?
Look, it's absolutely essential to think about who the audience could be. And the thing is, there's really good evidence from Maori TV, there's really good evidence from ALBA, I'm sure there's the same for S4C, I'm just thinking of what I've seen recently from ALBA about the way that their core demographic population responds to the TV that they produce, and the, you know, the much, much larger audience that actually engages with the content than you would think if you just looked at the language-speaking community, for example. So, you know, programmes made in Scottish Gaelic reach far more people than the Scottish Gaelic speaking community. Same. It's like we live in a global television world now. So a lot of the ideas around this have changed massively just in the last few years. You know, we live the world of television is not about national broadcasters. The platform doesn't matter. The iPlayer thing is really about parity with. It's about that consistent philosophy and having parity and visibility, and not having to build technology that costs hundreds of thousands of pounds just to do something that there's already a thing that does it perfectly well. But the key thing is about having growing talent, having production capacity, having an editorial framework for that to all work and grow in. Once that content exists, yes, it's got a primary audience that might be at its core Cornish language speakers, at its next circle, people who are interested in Cornish language and Cornishness, at its next circle, anybody who's interested in Cornish culture, whether they're Cornish or not, and at its next circle, a global television audience. If we make a Cornish language hinterland, it will sell worldwide and it will feed the channel. So that's the way we should be thinking of it, is how do we create a small but solid, sustainable industry.
Are you thinking about a channel that's entirely in Cynuric or Cornish
ending? No. I think it would have to have a very solid remit for what it does for the language, but it should be the term should always be language and culture. If it's just language, it's too narrow and too exclusive. If it's language and culture, it broadens it out and it leaves flexibility and it allows it to grow from where it is now to where it is in 5 years, where it is in 10 years, where it is in 20 years, and to evolve with us as a community.
Right, I got Malcolm.
My ancestry goes back to the early 1500s. Now, there are people in Cornwall who profess to be Cornish. They then have a seat in government and they do absolutely nothing to promote Cornwall. Now, this has got to stop. But the trouble is that there's a lot of no disrespect to the foreigners. They come in, I welcome Holly, but they're easily led by good speakers and they get elected to Parliament. I went to a meeting in London a number of years ago, and that was all the hierarchy in the health service, and they were delighted to see me. I questioned whether our parliamentary person, why was he there, and I was informed he didn't know anything about it. Need I say more? We need to put their boots in and do what they're professing to do. Because I'm a lone voice in the wilderness.
Thank you, Mark. My ancestry goes all the way back to East Africa several hundred thousand years ago. I got loved in.
I'm going to trump that with stardust.
I'm talking about people, not bits of matter. Loved in.
Yeah, I mean, I see there is something in the Frontiers report that's going to the scrutiny committee about BBC Cherno. Which is good. BBC Cherno is actually mentioned in the document, doing all the things that Bert's talking about. The question, I suppose, is how do people make sure, and it's sort of a bit tangential to Malcolm, how do people make sure that the output from whatever is produced is actually embedded in what is Cornwall and not just tokenistic? Because what tends to happen is you get tokenistic, you know, which do you put on first, jam or cream type stuff.
I'd say there are several ways of responding to that. One is enshrine it in legislation as it has been done in New Zealand. You know, I think that's a good start. That won't do it on its own. Then it's about making sure that the sort of processes and systems of the editorial management, so the commissioning process, also has clear strategy to it. And then it's about recruiting the right people who get it, you know, and that's a much more difficult thing to define, and I wouldn't want to start to define at this point. So I think there are building blocks. There's legislation, which we have recommendations that need to be turned into legislation that then need to be adopted and turned into principles of practice in the establishment of the channel in whatever form it takes, and you know, whatever the relationship with the BBC is. We, you know, saying BBC Curano because the BBC should be involved, our license fee should be invested in this to whatever degree, whether the editorial control should come from BBC. Well, I would say if BBC Nations and Regions employ somebody as the head of BBC Curano, great, that's a good move. And if we have an independent channel that sits alongside it, even better. And there are lots of models. Wales has a different model to Scotland. You know, there's just within Britain, there are two different models that we can look to. And neither of those might necessarily be right for us. What we need to do is go, what's the right shape for this to work for us? So they're absolutely the right questions to ask. I think there's clear steps to answer them.
My concern is that we have legislation at the moment that, for instance, BBC local radio should reflect the locality. And so BBC Radio Cornwall should reflect Cornwall. Not even sure that it does. But
BBC Radio Cornwall does a very good job for its audience, which is a very, very small sliver of the human beings who live within its catchment area.
It's one of the most listened to radio stations in the country.
Yeah, absolutely. But it sits within the Nations and Regions BBC South West editorial framework, and that's the issue.
I think the point you're making also, Ludley, is borne out by what you said, Denzel, about editorial and stuff. Any fool can put a video on YouTube or whatever, and you don't know where it's coming from. Picking up on one of the programmes you mentioned, and another one as well, Hinterland and Shetland, just to pick two examples. As a viewer, I have no idea who made them. I have no idea the nationality or the ethnic origin of anyone involved in any of them, but they both, in their different ways, to my mind, reflect the community they're meant to be representing. And I think that's because of the editorial values of whoever's producing the thing. And at that point, that's the thing, it's the values that matter, not whether the person playing the detective is from Shetland or from Norway or from East Africa, for that matter.
Can I just ask?
Yes.
I just want to tease out what the advantage is of heading for a BBC franchise rather than kind of going, actually, we want independence, we want to do our own thing, and we want to control the output, rather than having a BBC kind of thing sitting on the top of us.
I think it's a precarious balance line, and I think so. The advantage is that the BBC should have a legal obligation to be spending some of their licence fee on Cornish content in parity with Welsh and Scottish. And there's a very sort of simple economic advantage, not just economic. The BBC brings with it a few years of experience of running things like this, but it is also a very established shape, and it has its own, you know, anything that sits within a BBC Curano would sit within ultimately a BBC editorial framework, which makes it conservative with a small c, you know, that it's not known as the channel of groundbreaking political kind of first timers. That's not what its remit is, which is fine. The ideal thing would be to have both, that you have content that's produced by a BBC Curano within that framework, and content that's I don't know the exact relationship, but I believe that in Wales there is a relationship between S4C and BBC Cymru where there is a certain amount of co-commissioning, and there's a certain amount of content S4C produces that has to be bought into the BBC Wales network for broadcast. So editorial freedom within the rules of Ofcom, but a kind of a guaranteed amount of revenue coming from that. And again, I'm not sure exactly what the relationship with Alba is, but MG Alba is an entirely independent entity that has a relationship with the Scottish Parliament and with BBC Scotland. So it's like, this is why we need to look at, there's different shapes. There's a channel through the licence fee for the BBC. There's channel through government, through our devolved local government, through the Cornish Assembly, as will be. And, you know, it's how those things fit together, as well as other commercial, you know, is it an advertising-based channel? I would, you know, that should be looked at as part of the mix. Where are the different revenue streams? Where's the editorial control? And how do you get an ecology that works? So that's what we're looking for, is not just one version, but look for all the opportunities and try to create an ecology. Whereas at the moment, we've got pretty much not nothing, but it's like a spit.
Matthew.
Right, I'll turn this to myself. As someone who's that little bit of spit, as you just mentioned, I've spent the last 10 years producing broadcast content in the Cornish language. I've produced, of radio, coming up for about 500 hours of Cornish language radio, which goes on Coast FM, Radio St Austell Bay and The Source, and it should be still soon going on Radio Newquay. And in the last half year, I've started producing a monthly Cornish language magazine news programme, which has been going out on YouTube and Facebook, and we've been consistently getting 2,500 views plus of the TV show. And it takes, you know, reports, and it aims to show that the Cornish language is a vibrant, current, modern, and has got a range of speakers, more than Loveday and Paul Hodge. good though they are. But you see, the thing is that the council is very good in supporting the radio side of this, but I'm supporting the TV side of this off my back of my own business at the moment. And we are having, Loveday and I are having discussions about finding a way of getting me through the next year, because, as Denzel will know, it's a massive commitment to produce that amount of content on one zone almost. So half an hour a month in Cornish as a news TV. I'd like to be able to up that to a weekly programme, but that would need a massive input of time from myself and training as well. So, you know, this is from someone who's actually doing it now, who wants help, who's desperate for help.
I got Malcolm again.
The gentleman mentioned Coast FM. I was at the inception of Penwith Community Radio, which became Coast FM, because I worked my socks off for the benefit of the community. But my mistake I'm making is that I'm too busy helping people to learn the Cornish language. But the people who profess themselves, who get into Parliament, do not push the Cornish enough.
Thank you. I've lost track now, listening to Malcolm. Two things. One is, in order for the Welsh to get a Welsh television channel, there had to be quite a significant popular campaign in the first place, including people threatening to fast to death, etc., in order to do it, and people climbing up television masts. How can we... It's all very well to do the softly, softly approach to BBC... working in partnership with the BBC and creative industries in Cornwall to produce Cornish TV, film and radio programmes. How much is that actually a reality, and how much does that need pressure? That's what one point. And the other point is sort of linked to what Matthew was saying about Cornish language. Most of Cornish language output, even in mainstream things, is produced by volunteers. It's not paid production, and most projects will put in funding bids for all the things they're doing, but then say, oh, can I just find someone to help with the Cornish language? They're not necessarily paying a going rate. So I think it's really important in any model that's built of Cornish language input that professionalising the Cornish language input is a significant part of that, because otherwise why would people carry, you know, there's a capacity issue. There's a capacity issue where people have to have another job in order to be able to do it.
There's a capacity opportunity, I would say. I think this thing, I think what we need to do is, I hear you and I completely agree with everything that you're saying, but I just turn the tone of it around and say, at the moment, it feels like it's an issue because it's all being done on a voluntary basis. Start feeding that with some investment in a proper editorial framework, proper commissioning framework, proper structure that's built to start where we are but to grow rapidly. There are the means are there to grow rapidly, just need to point it in the right direction and feed it, and then all those things that are currently issues become opportunities for growth, for fast growth.
You know, the creative industries and the screen workers and whatever, put a proper cost on them, but you need to also put a proper cost on the real cost of.
They're not necessarily separate things. I think what you see where you've got indigenous language, minority language broadcasters is these things grow together. You know, so the people who want to work in that industry, if they see it, well, if I speak Cornish, I can work on the Cornish language programmes as well as the non-Cornish language programmes, then there's an incentive to, you know, there will be more Cornish language jobs as well as more Cornish language content. That's so exactly the two things grow together. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. As it happens.
Just one little point there, absolutely. I went to a conference of community news gatherers in Cardiff. Every single Welsh person there said it's essential to have, you've got to have Welsh if you want to, you know, you've got so many more work opportunities in Wales if you know Welsh in the industry.
I've got Julian and then Jack.
Julian, come over to you. Okay.
Miraz, Braz, Denzel, thank you very much for that. Obviously, thoughtful, you've got a total understanding of the subject, and it's really interesting to hear you speak, so thank you very much. I think I want to follow up on a couple of points. One is around the public pressure, and I'm sorry, I don't know if you've got a website or whether this is just hosted on 38 degrees.
Yeah,
so how much of your speech is sort of easily transferable for people? So taking up the pressure point, you know, the writing letters to MPs, I mean, you know, there may well need to be other activities, but the traditional sort of writing letters to the media, to MPs, this is what we want to happen. As your representative, what are you doing about it? Or indeed people writing to councillors. Then, you know, how can they find that information? How can they make sure that they're hitting home, as Malcolm said, to the MPs? If MPs are getting letters in their post bag, then they're more likely to think, actually, this is something that I need to take on board.
So there's quite a lot of the information on what I said there is on the campaign page. There is a blog post that I've put up called BBC Chrono as well, which has pretty much most of the other stuff that I've said on there as well. So it kind of it's all there.
And is that your blog?
Yes.
What's it called?
Yeah. It's called BBC Chrono. The blog post is it's on Medium. I can send you a link.
Yeah, that would be great. Thank you.
Talking about other regions. So going back to 2007 at the Celtic Media Festival, when Tessa Jowell stood up and said, the room was incandescent with rage from Northern Ireland and from Scotland, and Alba were asking, why is our settlement in the hundreds of thousands? And meanwhile, Wales were slightly smug and embarrassed that theirs was in the millions. And Tessa Jowell said, well, because they were burning buildings and people were dying in Wales. It was said by Tessa Jowell at the time, right there in front of everybody. There's this thing about why they would invest in Wales to that degree to stop what was happening, and why they would do a similar sort of thing in Scotland, because that is what is fair. That thing of, like, we have a really good case. It is very, very fair. It is our right, absolutely, and it's very, very reasonable. But you do have to remember that Eric Pickles has admitted on national television national minority status for the Cornish was a bribe. So we would be getting absolutely up into the echelons of, this is fair and right, but this is going to be an awkward thing for anybody to invest any money in. And so we have to be prepared that there'll be a gloves-off moment in whatever way for that to be moved forward. Yeah.
But you're calling for a revelation, Jack.
The other thing about just on commissioning, and you know the our experience of commissioning stuff in Cornwall is limited, but I've been commissioning creative and cultural projects for nearly 10 years now. There are ways of doing it. There are ways of setting criteria. There are ways of setting the question for what it is we want, and there's ways of commissioning quality bits of media. We can do it from within Cornwall. It's absolutely entirely possible. We just need to set that in place right from the very beginning. What is it we want? What are the questions? And how do we crowdsource the very, very best material? I absolutely think that it's something that we can do.
Oh, where's the chair
gone? He's gone. Who did anybody? I haven't got his list.
I've got one point. Milo's up. Thinking about what is, you know, there is this point, isn't it, about what would you put on the content? What is Cornish culture? You know, it's going to be Cornish culture. Well, that's a really subjective point. I mean, for a start, is it going to be just people doing dancing in tartan? Or, for example, when, I don't know if anyone here remembers when we did the, you know, the capital of culture bid was around, that one of the leading Conservatives said, well, what is all this culture stuff? I'd prefer this money to go to support, for example, the tall ships down at Falmouth, because that's what we love. And that's their culture. I mean, if a load of ships come in and people in Cornwall love going looking at ships, is that not Cornish culture? I don't know. So that what is Cornish culture could extend massively.
So I think this gets right to the nub of why we need to have a channel, not just a programme that gets made. You know, it's like a programme with a filmmaker's voice in it will speak one answer to that. A plurality of voices in a evolving editorial framework will answer that question, not simply, because there is no simple answer, it's a complex answer, but it will answer it in many ways, in many voices, and you know, in the same way you go, well, you know, look at all the Welsh TV output and go, what's Welsh culture? It's pretty bleeding obvious if you look at it, but you try to define it, it becomes reduced. So rather than trying to write a sentence that defines what Cornish culture is, let's just express ourselves with some means to do that.
One thing, celebrating St. Patrick's Day.
But it might be useful to have some plural voices generating some values that we might wish this to express. So, for instance, we started out this meeting by talking about our disruptive natures, and actually, disruption and arsiness might be a really useful thing to have as part of the value strand in this. And if you have a whatever comes. Then we won't actually end up with something that really speaks for us, because I completely support the idea of plural voices, but we still need to have some values that underpin it, that we say this is us.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think that's kind of that. So first of all, there needs to be, well, I don't, it's not first of all, there are parallel tracks. One of the parallel tracks is the following the legislation and trying to get what is right and just and should be there, and the license fee and all the rest of it. Not waiting for that to happen, but alongside that, we absolutely should be doing that and getting lots of voices together and exploring that question, what is Cornish culture? How do we express it? What does it look like? And do it in a way we go, okay, forget about the logistics for a minute, forget a load of people in the room and go, so we're writing our commissioning framework now. What programmes are we going to commission? And what, you know, spend a few days coming up with a thousand ideas for programmes, and then from that, absolutely, it will start to emerge.
Because it will be great that there will be, you know, an appetite for, you know, yet another series about great Cornish gardens. Lovely. But wouldn't it be wonderful to have something that actually is about the crisis in farming and what's going to happen to our fishermen, that you actually do have programmes which also do confront some of the really difficult, contentious stuff that maybe people would rather have.
And actually, on the BBC, yeah, independent.
Well, that's the issue, isn't it?
I think it is really important, because if we can generate ideas, and you know, I've probably got 100 myself, but if we can generate the ideas and present them in a simple way. As a kind of like, you know, so if that question is asked, which undoubtedly it will be by naysayers trying to put a spoke in the works, you know, trying to make this happen. If people go, yeah, but what are the programmes going to be? You go, well, here's some we thought of earlier, you know. Then, and on a very practical sense, then on that miraculous day, which I believe will happen. So when we do get in a position where somebody, a team of people, is employed in posts where they are sat there with a, I was going to say checkbook, with a BACS payment to commission some of these programmes,
there's already some ideas that are floating up to the surface there, and because you're right, you can't start with a blank canvas, and I don't think we are either, because we're not starting from nothing. We're starting from lots of bits that are emerging, not through broadcast television, but through everything else, all those kind of ideas and talent and capacities growing up there.
Do you know how BBC Cymru came about their remit? How did they formulate what they were going to do and why they were going to do it?
I think probably S4C rather than BBC Cymru is kind of the one to look at. I don't know what the...
But that could be...
Yeah, I know. That's what I think. We should look at S4C, we should look at TG Car in Ireland, we should look at Alba, we should look at Marie TV, we should look at all of these things. There's a wealth of steps that have gone before us. We're not starting from this is a good idea. I wonder how we go about it. We're starting from a place of lots of people have been down this road already in lots of different ways. There's a
Some
lot we can learn from that. And
yeah, come and talk
absolutely.
About
I think there's
well.
There'll be a great willingness certainly from Wales and Scotland. I know, there's definitely people there who would happily come and help us thrash some of this stuff out, who have got some great lessons because they've been down this road over the last decade, two decades, three decades, not much more than that. We're kind of, a lot can happen in 10, 20 years.
Well, I just think it's really interesting the turn that this conversation is taking, actually, because it seems to me that one of the things that has limited us for a long time now is the idea that somehow or other Cornish culture is tied up with a sort of archaic form of folk music and a few old clogs bashing around the place, and actually it is very, very limiting, and that actually starting to think about culture as being a series of values, which means that you come at everything with a set of values, which they may lead you to ask questions, make mischief, or do whatever you do, and the idea that in the behaviours that we develop in order to survive and prosper in our particular environment, which is what I've always understood culture to be, that in those behaviours there will be values that bond us, which may well be values that have got more to do with the imperatives of surviving in your environment than they've got to do with what you think. But that actually looking at culture from that point of view does spark us into a series of discussions about what we mean by culture and who we are in the world in which we live. Our environment is changing very rapidly, partly because of climate change, partly because of communication, partly because we don't have to do the same things living in society that you had to do 100 years ago in order to get beyond the age of 5 years. So therefore, it seems to me that one of the things that we ought to be considering, two things. The first one is that it would be really helpful, this is kind of putting this back to you and Sue a bit, is if the kind of the strategic cultural actors in Cornwall actually came together around the idea and started to push it as a key developmental objective. Because actually, if we've got the LEP saying the first one of their priorities is the creative industries, well, that's cool, but they're just a bunch of business heads. What do they know about it? Absolutely nothing. Indeed, it probably frightens them because they don't know anything. They know how to produce washers, and they've probably got a fair idea about how to plough in a straight line. But when it comes to producing a piece of theatre, they haven't got the first idea to where to start, and probably what's in the theatre frightens them shitless anyway. So I think it would be really good to see those sort of creative thinkers and executives coming together around the idea. And then the second thing is, and this might be stem from that, is that actually we need to be thinking about what it is that we are that informs those values that Sue's talking about, which informs that culture, which is bonded by the multiplicity of its own diversity, and by its approach to change and by its approach to how do you bond the future to the past and make something meaningful in the present. All those kind of philosophical questions that we push to one side while we think about outputs,
It seems to me that, that actually in developing our thinking around how to take this forward, there is a process to be set up, which is about bringing lots of people together, you know, like getting Knee-High Theatre to talk to the Cornish pirates, or getting behaviour psychologists at Trelisk to talk to choreographers or whatever it happens to be, filmmakers, you know, those collaborations and clashes that actually make culture lively, that we actually need to be engineering those, but in a Cornish context, so that we're not just creating a platform, we're not just creating a business opportunity and a training opportunity, but we're creating an energy which is beyond doubt requiring that we get this developmental opportunity, which is what Denzel's talking about. So it seems to me that actually there's a huge collaborative effort that needs to be made, which is not so much about campaigning, but much more about figuring out who we are and where we're going for the future.
With D.G. Hinton, mischief maker in charge, as Director General.
I think that's very exciting, Bert, because it also, in a sense, it throws the gauntlet down, which is, in a way, when we look at local broadcasting, it tends to be very news-focused. It's about what's happening this week, with some actually mostly English music thrown in, or American. But actually just throw down the gauntlet and say, OK, what would our creative output be? And that actually becomes really exciting, because that's doing something that doesn't, isn't. I suppose the equivalent would be something like S4C Now does Public Coombe, which was originally BBC. And I think the thing that's very interesting about Public Coombe is it's a soap opera. So it's telling, it's a storytelling medium. It's a dramatic medium, and it's in the Welsh language. But it does a subtitled omnibus, English subtitled omnibus on a Sunday, and that the idea that you could have something that completely celebrates our language and our culture, but actually is also available to the non-speakers or the visitors who come and want to know a bit more. And the idea that we could have a much more creative and also a visual output, because I think the other thing about the broadcast media as it stands, because it's audio, one of our key values is to do with visual beauty, spectacle, design, the physical nature of our landscape, and to have something that actually has is a visual medium. I think it really does throw down a really interesting challenge to us. What will it be? It won't be something that already exists. There will be very interesting models in terms of Welsh, but also the Maori station. But what would the visual nature of this be? And that's really I think that's really exciting.
If we through a series of events, things ended up with all of those ideas focused into program ideas, you know, which there's a simple format we can kind of capture a lot of that thinking into program ideas, which then sit there ready to be made, as well as and then distill from that those values, which then become the founding principles of the channel and the broadcast entity, whatever that may be. That would be a very positive step that isn't dependent on anybody else. That's something which we can do. We just need to resource it, organise it, make it happen. So what I'd be interested in now is that's one step, that's one action. Who takes that forward? How do we go about making that happen? There's an action around the legal process, the legislative process that needs to be taken forward. There's, you know, what are we going to take away from it? I think this is really, I'm very excited. This is very encouraging, and I think what I don't want to do is walk out of the room in a little while and then go, well, then it's all gone. It's like we need to capture this and focus it into some specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, time-based actions.
Well, in that case, I'm sorry to do this to you, Julian.
But it seems to me that bearing in mind what's in the LEPS document, bearing in mind what's in the culture strategy, bearing in mind what should be in the New Frontiers, hopefully, and all the rest of it, and also, you know, that the council is clearly recognising and supporting the LEP in understanding that creativity is one of the key driving forces for future economic, socio-economic development, it would be incredibly helpful to think that if we are going to set about developing a series of processes and events that begin to develop that energy which makes the case compelling, then and attracts people towards it, then it would be incredibly helpful to think that we might be able to identify some resource that would actually enable that process, those events, to be put together, and some organisation, some group, or some individual be put in a position where they can actually begin that begin that development process. It's quite complex, but the more I think about it, the more I think that if we do it and we focus on it as the development of thinking around developing a TV platform, actually it has a knock-on effect on many, many other aspects of what it is that Cornwall is trying to achieve for the future. And what it really does more than anything else is it brings people around the table to think positively about how to make a vibrant future for Cornwall and Cornish people. And I think that's absolutely essential. We've spent the last 10 years sitting around playing and singing the austerity blues, and I, for one, am sick to the back teeth of it. And the only way we stop doing it is by stopping doing it, mm-hmm. by actually turning our minds to another perspective. And I think we've got the opportunity to do that. So I would strongly request that maybe you take that question back into the cabinet and put it in front of them. I don't think we're talking about a lot of money to get that process going, but the money would be very, very helpful in order to get the process underway.
I think Denzel referenced that process has started, and you probably know more about the piece of research that's going on than I do.
Well, yeah. So I know there was a piece of research that was done last summer into the that was about creating a strategy for the screen-based industries. I was interviewed in August. I haven't seen that. It's not been published yet. So I don't really know more than you about where that is, other than it happened. Somebody was commissioned to do it. The research piece of research happened, and it's in a draft form somewhere circulating around the bureaucratic wheels of motion.
That opportunity is basically the draft form of the... Because isn't it pretty much, would you say? I mean, it's...
Well, it fits into that opportunity.
So the creative... So new assets. I mean, if you look at that...
Number four as well.
Number four as well. I mean, these are about... But I mean, that's... It does say it's going to flesh it out, but it just says an investment of, it fits in with all the super fast broadband investment, the tech zones and everything. But whilst the microphone's here, I mean you will have noticed that this week the council have launched a massive campaign all over the world called Invest in Cornwall, and that's not, you know, it's more about just attracting money, it's about investing in Cornwall's future, and it's absolutely the right time. I mean, you know, to just do that. I mean, one of my things, if I had the power, I'd say let's set up a film unit. What has brought more money into Cornwall than many other things in the last few years? Love it or hate it, bloody Poldark and Doc Martin and any other film and TV thing. They bring, I mean, there are four flights from Germany a week into Newquay now, on the back of Rosamund Pilcher. Now, if it was up to me, we create a unit which would create these programmes to showcase Cornwall and what we do and sell them around the world. Right. And maybe a little bit of that profit might fund BBC Kermit.
The important thing about Poldark is it was written by a little old bloke in his garden shed who used to go clubbing on a Friday night in Perranporth. Okay, so I found out last week.
Well, I go down the region. I've got plenty.
Yeah, yeah. But the point is that it's not just about having the film unit. Yeah. It's actually about having a whole infrastructure of creativity and an environment within which people think creatively in order to generate the product. I mean, actually having the ability to start the process and finish it off—that is really what we're about. That's what, you know, TV Curno would be about, because it would mean that we're producing product
Why are other people making programmes about us? Let's make programmes about ourselves and sell it.
Yes, but the interesting thing is that the perspectives adopt...
Stop talking across yourself.
Sorry.
The perspectives that they adopt are external, and so illusions are created about Cornwall, which many people in Cornwall find quite alienating. That woman on the ITV, I can't remember her name now, Caroline Quentin, was a classic example.
Right. My feeling is that we're starting to repeat ourselves. I think it's been a very instructive and useful conversation. Two things I want to say. For those who are on the steering group, the next meeting is on Tuesday the 27th of March, in not this room, but the one two down, at 7 o'clock in the evening. All right? And secondly, I want to say that I think this matter will be something we'll talk about there and then, because it's worthwhile going ahead with. It's obviously a project that needs backing, and it's obviously a project that the convention needs to get behind. That's not to say that's all we're going to do. I'd like to thank Denzel for leading what's been a very, very interesting and, I hope, instructive conversation. I think everyone who spoke has learned something as well. That includes me. And I think it's probably about time we all went off and had lunch. So thank you all very much.